ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
One of the best barometers of whether a child is getting a good education is how well they can read. On this edition of UWM Today, we focus on literacy and the role that technology can play in helping kids to build their reading skills. Our guest is Candace Storr Stevens, Assistant Professor of Education at UWM. Welcome. Good to have you with us today, Candace.
Thank you for having me.
So I have to tell you, as I was getting ready for this program, I was thinking about my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old granddaughters who are themselves just beginning to learn how to read. And the process has brought back all of these memories of our own kids as the light bulb goes on as you sit down and begin to shape words and vowels and syllables. And it reminded me as we got ready for this program, it really is quite a miracle that we can read in the first place when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable process, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That we can take in all of those words and those little scratches on the page and turn them into ideas and images in our mind. Yes, it's fascinating.
And yet it's tough. It's hard. Not everybody can read as easily as they might wish or that we as parents might like them to.
Mm-hmm. Or they can start to develop identities where they feel like they're not strong readers. And then all of a sudden, the idea of reading becomes something they want to turn away from. They turn to something else. So yes, it's very difficult and very can be a weighted topic as well.
Well, in your role at UWM, you're helping teachers in training, teachers who are going to individuals who will soon be in the classroom teaching full time to better equip themselves with the tools that they're going to need to help kids on that right road. Let's talk about that work.
Okay. Well, I focus primarily with adolescents, so students in late elementary, middle school, and high school, and really helping to think about how they approach reading. So they have oftentimes received a lot of instruction related to decoding of words and primary reading practices, but it becomes very different in the older elementary grades and middle school grades where they're really expected to do a lot more with reading. However, at the same time, they also are becoming increasingly more interested in their own lives and their own identities and what they want to do and how they want to present themselves online. And so there are some different pulls and challenges that go along with adolescent reading, I guess you could say. So I look at that and I talk a lot with teachers about those different pressures and how to approach those in the classroom with your content goals and other instructional goals you might have.
How different are the challenges adolescents face today as they try to build those reading skills compared to, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 years ago before we had all of the different media tools that we walk around with, from phones to iPads to constantly being plugged in to something with video or audio?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would definitely say there's a lot of competition for our attention, where before there weren't as many flashy ideas and narratives grabbing our attention or even invitations to play with narratives, such as with video games. So there's a lot more competition for your attention and what you might invest your time in. So that's a starting point. And so I think one of the things I really try to emphasize with the teachers I work with is that it's not about necessarily having the students focus on just a traditional book, but how they can enter into reading in so many different ways. So if the students are very interested in a video game or a certain TV show or a certain website or meme that's being circulated or YouTube channel, to like build in reading around that, around what the topics are. So it's not necessarily about saying reading is not screen time, but how does reading actually weave itself in around all of those activities?
That's really interesting because I know some parents who really see this or believe that there should be a separation between screen time and what they might describe as real reading, you know, with a book in front of them and pages to turn. You're suggesting that the two don't have to be divorced.
No, I would definitely say they do not have to be divorced. I also would say that there is a unique experience also in just being curled up in a chair with a book and a blanket and a cup of hot cocoa. I mean, that in itself can be a ritual that we can nurture in our homes as well. That is a unique experience as well. But I wouldn't say that reading that's happening on a screen or in a magazine or in a graphic novel or even a graphic novel online, I wouldn't say that that's not reading. Students are still, or I should say readers, my children included, they are still engaging in a story. They're going into a story or they're going into another world if it's nonfiction. They're pursuing curiosities. They're pursuing ideas. They're being exposed to new words, new images, all of these things that build up their awareness and content knowledge of the world. So even though it may be happening on a screen versus a book, it still very much is reading. I mean, if they're still curious and they're still asking questions as they're going there, they're still building up those reading abilities.
So for teachers who've been around for a while, who've been using a more traditional approach to helping youngsters learn how to read, do they have to break habits? Are they old school, and do they have to learn the new school, adapting technology to be successful with today's kids?
Well, I wouldn't say that those old skills are something we can just set aside. Those old skills are very crucial to solid, critical, close reading. Those are very important skills that we still need to think about. And when we're reading online, those practices are different because reading online isn't always as linear as it is in a book where we're reading from left to right down the page. On the screen, when we're reading, our eyes are attracted to many different things. There's often ads in one place, or there's often images or video. So it is less of a linear experience. So the reading practices that we had from reading the book are shifted. They're different. So those practices are very much thinking about, okay, how is the page different on the screen, and supporting those skills. And there's a lot, too, about helping, you know, build up that executive function of a reader, too, to be like, okay, what am I reading? What is my question? What is my purpose in reading this? Especially when you have the newest game being advertised in the right sidebar. So I wouldn't say that those old skills are not important. They very much are important. But when they're being applied in the space of the screen, the interface of the screen, there are many different demands on those. And so it's about thinking about, okay, what are the solid reading, close reading skills you've always had with a book, and how do they look different on the screen? And then how do I then think out loud like that for the students so that they know that when they're looking at the screen and they're being pulled to do this, they can come back to those central questions of reading. And that's where it might be a little bit of learning a new practice. So I myself will admit that I prefer to read the paper book. I love the feel and the crack of the bind when I open that up. However, and so I know there are times I read online as well, and that's a different experience. And it helps, and I navigate the page differently when I'm reading on my tablet than when I'm reading in a book. And so it's about modeling those reading practices, but yet bringing in the close reading practices with that for our readers, who are many times, some of them are even starting reading on the screen before reading in the book. So it's about modeling or thinking out loud those thinking practices that are part of the close reading. So I wouldn't say it's definitely not abandoning that. It's about how do I translate this to the screen, or how do I translate this to this device or this interface of this software program or this curriculum program that's displayed on the screen.
You talked earlier about how critical it is to get kids interested in the narrative, knowing that that there's energy and excitement in a story about an idea or people or places that they've never been before. Does that process speed up because you have these new nonlinear experiences with a display of images wrapping around text and so on? Are they learning faster because of technology tools that you've described?
I don't know if I would say we are learning faster. I would say that there are different maybe practices or processes that we've been able to maybe outsource to certain technologies. But yet we still need to kind of think about them when we bring them back in. But I wouldn't say personally that it's speeding things up. It may be having us place higher expectations on ourselves because we outsourced this one thing to that, we want to be able to make up that time and learn something new. But I wouldn't say that it's speeding things up. I think it's allowing us to multitask more, but multitasking, while yes, it allows us to accomplish more within the same amount of time, isn't necessarily allowing us to always have the deeper understanding of things. So I think sometimes it may appear like it's speeding up because we're very socially connected. So now we have all these places where we can read online, where we're doing social reading, where we're on a site such as Goodreads, where we're reading a book and we track our progress on it. And then all of a sudden people comment on our progress. And so sometimes then we are motivated to maybe read faster so that we can show our progresses progressing and others can comment back on that and suggest other books and like, oh, I'm reading this too. Or so there's a social accountability that may seem like it's kind of speeding things up, but I think it's just kind of sometimes playing in with motivation. So I wouldn't just want to say that learning is speeding up, but I can see how people might think that because a lot of learning is being multitasked in the sense that we're doing multiple things at once. So, but I would just caution us to always also think about, okay, what is our goal? What is our focus? What are we really wanting to think about here when we read this task, this text, or when we do this task online, or when we interact online in this way?
I remember when I was learning how to read, there was a lot of talk about attention span, you know, mm-hmm. about how you need to burrow in and to really concentrate or focus on the text in front of you. Mm-hmm. Because students, youngsters today, have so many other channels of media that are feeding in, and you know, a lot of those are created to provide blurps or short bursts of information. I'm thinking of everything from Snapchat to Twitter mm-hmm. feeds, you know, IM that kids are using constantly. Does that disrupt the ability to be more focused and immerse yourself into a text when you have been literally texting back and forth with your friends before you begin to think about the task at hand?
Mm-hmm. I do think that we need to think about attention span because I think that it's the clickability of getting to the next aspect has very much made us want to have more of a quick response, whether it's a response, a social response online, or whether it's a response to the next screen or to the next item, or the readability and accessibility of like, oh, I don't like this video, so I'm just going to stop and go to this next one that's available here. So I think that while attention span is a component of that, I also think it's about the feeling that you don't want to miss out on something. Like, oh, if I watch this full 6-minute video, I might miss out on this opportunity to watch this other 5-minute video. When really, if we think about those things, 6 and 5 minutes are not that long, but yet online, they are very long. And so
four seconds can be long.
Oh, exactly. Yes, if we think about Vines or these other kind of looping memes and things like that. So I do think that attention span is a component of this, but I also feel that there's also a fear of there's access to so much and you don't want to miss out on it. And so that then I think can trump your attention span and you might be really interested in something, but then you're almost necessarily overwhelmed with the access to so many different options that overrides your desire, your central focus of trying to find an answer to something to being like, oh, maybe this is the better answer or this is the better way to get it. So there's this negotiation, this assessing multiple things at once that I think can override attention span.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Candace Storr Stevens. Candace is an assistant professor of education at UWM's School of Education in the Department of Teaching and Learning. And that means that you are helping our adult students, our college students, mm-hmm. Learn how to teach, mm-hmm. particularly in this case, teaching students how to read. And you've been using technology in your work. How did you come across the idea or the notion that that using new technology can assist people in what has been traditionally viewed as a very, very set, formulaic way of getting ready for the world, learning how to read?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I was always just interested in writing, and that's what brought me to education. So I was an English teacher. I taught in middle school and high school, and I remember when teaching fifth grade, I was teaching in New York City, in Brooklyn, New York, and my classroom, my classroom was one of probably 5 or 6 classrooms in this building that had good connectivity to internet. And so there was a grant from a private funder that allowed us to have 5 laptops in our room. And back in the early 2000s, this was kind of a big deal, this access to hardware and connectivity. And so I remember I was working with a group of students that I would say 85% of them, their first language was not English. And so encouraging students to feel, well, having them feel comfortable to write and the fluency of writing and expressing their ideas was a big hurdle and a big barrier for me to work with. But I remember seeing, we had been doing a lot of writing before, and I had been working a lot with topics of interest to them, and that motivated them. But then I remember when, in the middle of the year, when these laptops showed up in my room, the excitement that there was to play around with this new tool of expression, this ability to bring in images with their ideas. And I couldn't, and we only had five. And so the students had to sign up to use them, and they had to have certain benchmarks done or certain process and the steps in the writing process done to get to them. And that, the way in which that transformed my writing workshop, which is very linked with the reading workshop of my classroom, I was just amazed at that. And that was only my second year of teaching. I continued teaching. And then I started bringing in video, and I had a course that was actually on film and media. And in that class, we learned about the conventions of film and media and visual storytelling. And then the last third of the class, I had two groups, so a third of the class would make videos, and it was limited resources, so not everybody could make a video, and so we had to go through different things of like which groups will be able to make a video. But just seeing how the opportunity to be able to make a video about your peers, about a topic, how that motivated the students to want to learn deeper and read more about the movie conventions and the film conventions so that they could make their own video. Just seeing how that ability to produce something, whether it was an essay with images on a laptop or whether it was a video about some topic, that a motivation to produce something of their own, how that motivated them to read and how that motivated them to write.
So it brought them, the non-traditional tools brought them back to being better at the traditional method of reading with cracking open a book.
But I would say it was an inversion, I think, of how I had always thought about in my schooling growing up. I think growing up it was always you read first and then you produce. Like you read and gather all the information and then you produce. But what I was seeing in my classroom is that it was the opportunity to produce with different tools and also different modes of expression, such as images and video and music and sound, that motivated the reading and gave the reading a real purpose. And they had real questions that then they took into their reading that helped them have a longer attention span. And so it was those things I was like, that really inverted the model of like reading first, then producing with your knowledge, but like producing and how does reading actually thread itself throughout all of that and give a purpose. And so that's when I started thinking, wait a minute, this idea of reading and writing, and especially writing, how can we write in different ways and where does writing show up? That's what motivated me to start thinking more about what is writing and what are our writing tools and how do we express ourselves. That then informed my graduate work and then now informs my work with teachers.
If you talk to someone who is looking at whether the investments that we make in our school system are paying off, you often hear people say, we've got to test it. We've got to measure it. We have to quantify it. We have to know whether or not the money we're putting into a teaching program, into a classroom, is giving us a return on that investment. And so we have lots of tests right now. In fact, some people suggest we're teaching for the test as opposed to teaching for the joy of learning. As you think about the ways in which technology have changed the way that you're helping people learn how to read, have you been able to measure changes in the success of those kids when it comes to literacy?
Well, I think it's hard to, first of all, I think it's hard to assess and give a numerical measure to process. And a lot of literacy is a set of practices and things we learn through processes and interaction with texts, with people, back to like your granddaughters. Is it your granddaughters you said that are learning to read and write? The joy of that beginning reading and writing is not so much figuring out how to give pictures to the words on the page, but it's that ability to jump up in your lap and give you a book, holding it with sticky fingers and upside down saying, read me, read me. It's those rituals that really, I would say, frame and motivate a lot of this reading and writing. And the reading and writing that's happening online is also framed by these really social experiences of interacting and processes about, hey, look it, I just made this video and I shared it online. Come like it. Come like this. Click like it. And those are these interactions that shape these learning practices. And so they're really built on process. It's not, sure, we can show a finished product of be able to write like this and then it will get this numerical numerical score. But there's so much more process that's involved with learning that, and not everybody comes to it at the same pathway. And so that is very hard to measure numerically. I mean, the numerical aspects are one way to look at things, but there's so much more that we need to look at. And that's why if we teach just for that final product and don't think about any of the processes and practices that lead to that, and what social components fuel that, then we miss out a big part of the learning process that gets to that final shiny product that we want to give the high numerical score.
Yeah, and you perhaps run the risk of squelching the creativity that would ultimately result in kids producing better copy, better mm-hmm. writing, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to just rote memory and regurgitating what they're expected to put onto a piece of paper because it's a test.
Yes, I worked with a couple of classrooms that were using the innovative approach of documentary filmmaking and radio documentary as a way to explore nonfiction reading and writing. So how can we learn the conventions of nonfiction texts and how to read them, and how can we learn the conventions of writing and presenting nonfiction texts through creating radio and film documentaries. And in this class, this was a class that attracted a wide variety of skills, of student skill levels. And in that class, I saw students that really struggled to submit their written assignments for class and then were at risk of even failing the class. However, when it came to writing a voiceover for their radio documentary or the video documentary, I watched them write multiple drafts. And revision for all writers is a hard process to encourage. And here was a writer who did not even submit essays for class that were due, but here he was writing a page and a half of voiceover and doing three drafts. I witnessed him crumple up three drafts and throw them in the garbage. And this is while I knew that he hadn't turned in his essay, which was only a page. And so then, and I went to him, I said, and I picked the crumpled papers up and I brought them to him and I said, hey, look at all this writing you're doing. He's like, that's not writing. That's just what's happening. So here he's trying to really capture how to present this coffee shop and what it means in the neighborhood for his neighborhood and his classmates. And he was revising it three times, but he didn't see it as writing. And so I think if we were to use his voiceover and assess that for what writing competencies he has, we could maybe get at some of these numerical measures. But the thing is that process, that internal motivation, that desire to capture that's what is in terms of this coffee shop, that's what's being missed out a lot of times when we teach for the test. That creativity, that purpose, that genuine drive is oftentimes missed out. So I'll never forget seeing those crumpled pieces of paper and him saying, that's not writing. And I'm thinking as a writing teacher, yes, that is.
That was success, right?
That was success.
Yeah. So you're working with college students, getting them ready to be prepared to be great teachers, hopefully, in the classroom using these new techniques. Let's dial it back just a little bit and talk about what happens at home. What advice would you give parents or like me, a grandparent? What can I do to incorporate technology into the way that I encourage those granddaughters to be better readers and to engage in the process of literacy?
Well, I think first just starting with what are they interested in? And I know sometimes we have our images of what reading is, curling up on the chair with a book. But what are their interests and how might they explore those interests through a variety of different ways? So it's not just about, oh, you're interested in horses? Here's a book on horses. But how might then technology help them to explore their interests? Because I think—
So does that mean pulling up some videos on YouTube when they're sitting in your lap, mm-hmm. a book on one side and maybe a screen on the other?
Yes, I think that very much could be that. So if you are reading a book, you're sitting down, sitting side by side, reading a book, and you're asking questions. It's great to always ask questions when you're reading, because when you ask those questions out loud, you're helping the young reader learn how to internalize those questions, which make them stronger readers. But you're asking a question all of a sudden, ooh, a bridle. What's a bridle? When I think of a bride, I think of like a bride in a wedding. But wait a minute, I don't think that's what this means. Let's go look up what a bridle is. Because right away, a bridle, I'm thinking of the mouthpiece that a horse wears. However, that image, the students or the young readers don't have that image. Yeah, go there. How can online be a resource to deepen our understanding? So you go and look at, oh, this is a bridle. Oh, and this is how it fits into the horse's mouth. Oh, all of a sudden, we're building vocabulary and we have images. We're advancing that schema of understanding of those different things. And then, so if they're very interested in horses, okay, after reading that book, oh, if you were to have a horse, where would we keep our horse? What kind of horse would you want? Gosh, what kind of horses are there? Let's go find out what kind of horses there are. So going and doing that investigation.
So you literally jump back and forth from, yes, from a book, a traditional text, to a video or maybe an audio file, and try to integrate it into the into your own narrative of what's going on, mm-hmm, as you help teach those kids.
And then there, I would say there's a point too where you can step from the, like, the investigation and even say, okay, I think we need to create a plan for this horse and what horse we might have. Let's go ahead and could you draw a picture of the horse that you want? What would the horse's stable look like? Let's do that. And we'll use that as our list of things to think about for if we get a horse someday. So then they have that time to go create, and they get to go and revisit and reflect on all those resources that they just looked at, both in the book, both online, and they're creating another thing. Then that becomes a touchstone that you come back to when you continue the conversation or when they create something further. So I think that's another step that you can go into too.
So that means that as parents, we shouldn't rely on teachers to go ahead and use these new techniques to help accelerate the learning that our kids are engaged in. We may have to change a little bit ourselves and be a little more flexible in terms of not necessarily separating a traditional text from screen time.
Mm-hmm. I would say
that's tough for some people who've learned and have read the same way all their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the reading practice is different, and how they came to reading and how I came to reading and how their children are coming to reading is different. So, yes, it may look a little bit different. I would also say, in addition to becoming a little bit more flexible about what is the page that is being read, whether it's a screen, whether it's a book, whether it's this, I would also think about engage in conversation with them. Ask them questions, because asking them questions, you could sit down and read a short newspaper article online, and just asking them questions about what's happening, that in itself will deepen their ability to read and maybe more strengthening of their reading abilities than having them read even independently for a half hour. Not that I would ever say don't do that, but I mean, just I think having that dialogue and that conversation, I think that conversation has gone down, and that's sometimes what happens in teenage years as well, is there's not as much dialogue about topics and those questions, and where the teenagers see the adults modeling their thinking and how they come at a text, that amount of dialogue goes down, and especially as these other communication devices come in and replace that dialogue. So I would just encourage also, have that dialogue. Ask questions. What's going on in that book? My son right now is very involved in Dungeons and Dragons. He will read about Dungeons and Dragons for hours. And it's nonfiction. It's nonfiction. These manuals for building these campaigns. So he's building imaginary worlds. So he's not reading fiction, but I know that he's building worlds. He's building the narrative in his mind. And so I ask him, "What is going on? What's up with all these monsters that you're reading about and you're designing? Tell me about this world." So even just asking them questions is having them give words to what they're reading, what they're creating. So that in itself is something that parents can do as well to build that bridge across that leniency. So you can still feel like you understand what's going on, but you can also kind of see a window into how they actually are building their worlds and their vocabulary through their practices.
Candace, fascinating conversation. You've encouraged me to be more open and take some chances as I sit down with those granddaughters. And I suspect our listeners also have some new ideas on how they can help encourage their kids or grandkids to enjoy the process of reading and becoming more literate. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Candace Storr-Stevens, Assistant Professor of Education at UWM's School of Education, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.